Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as episode number 71 of The Amazing Spider-Cast. In it, Chris and Jen are joined by Bob Retall for a look at Amazing Fantasy 15 and Amazing Spider-Man number 1 through 5. This episode was originally released on The Amazing Spider-Cast feed on May 24th, 2008.
All right, well, welcome to episode 71 of The Amazing Spider-Cast. I'm your co-host, Chris Johnson.
And I'm your co-host, Jen Capelli.
All right. Well, on tonight's episode, we're going to be starting a new monthly run of episodes where we'll be looking from Amazing Fantasy number 15 onwards, the Amazing Spider-Man title. And joining us for these episodes each month will be Bob Retall.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Jen.
Who, except for about four issues, can pretty much read every issue of Amazing from the original copies.
Three as of today.
Nice. Congrats on being poor. No kidding.
Fortunately, not putting me in the poorhouse.
Yeah.
That's good. Good.
I'm not making the choice of feeding my family or buying comic books. I have the spare cash.
Kindling, because the heat's been cut off. No.
It was 100 today, so I don't have to worry about that. Worry about my air conditioning being cut off.
That's right. You're out there in permanent desert land. That's okay. I'm just, podcasting from my igloo right now. We get good wireless. You'd be surprised.
For being frozen solid, yeah.
Hey now. I had to carve the letters on my keyboard. That's right.
Superior Inuit technology.
Exactly. Sweet.
Sweet.
Well, you got lots of news to go through, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
Go for it.
And this is extremely late reporting it because of just delays and whole bunch of business out of our control. We're late getting this out, but you probably heard by now that starting with Amazing Spider-Man number 568, that will be the start of a 6-issue arc entitled New Ways to Die that will have Dan Slott as writer and John Romita Jr. will be returning to the Amazing Spider-Man title.
Oh, that's hot right there.
That's so hot. That has just tempted me so much more than anything else to buy Amazing again.
I'd say just do it. Who cares?
No.
Well, I mean, if you want to do it, but don't do it just because you think people are gonna get on your case about it.
No, I'm not gonna do it.
Oh, you're lost then.
Hey, I'll pick it up when the marriage returns. So,
Bob, what do you think about all that? That whole.
I can appreciate the principle. You know, I stopped reading Spider-Man for 2 or 3 years in the 90s when I, it wasn't anywhere near as philosophical a reason. I just thought it started to suck. But I've since gone back and, picked up most of the issues, all of the issues actually, out of just bins. It didn't cost that much, for those issues.
Yeah.
So, wasn't that big of a deal. And I treat that a lot of ways, when I stop reading a series that I've collected for a long time. I'm a completionist. I know I'll go back and find them, but usually I can find those issues in, like, dollar bins or something, because if I stop getting something that's on its way down the chute, those issues are not going to cost a lot of money later on.
Nice. Now, this arc that we're talking about is including a new symbiote. Well, it's going to be Venom. But now, what's it called? Is it like anti-venom?
Anti-venom.
And he's white with black markings, basically. What do you think this might be? Like, what's your whole thought about it?
Well, since it's anti and it's Slott, my first idea was that it had something to do with Mr. Negative.
Oh, that makes sense. Very nice.
Or, since it's anti-venom, it could be the symbiote getting a hold of Aunt May.
Oh, that I like that theory more, actually.
It's Anti-Venom, not Anti-Venom.
There you go.
God.
It's just the spelling, you know, it's A-U-N-T-Y, Venom.
Hey, Jen, when the Venom symbiote ate Aunt May in that cartoon you drew,
yeah,
it was actually absorbing her, not eating
her. That's what I was going for, clearly.
So if they recognize that cartoon you drew as continuity...
Oh, my God. Yeah, I wish. Oh, I saw the Gold and Oldie issue. If you go with the LCS, I just kind of, like, walked away.
That's at the Editor's Month.
Oh.
The Assistant Editor's Month, when I had that.
Yeah, I think so. Someone had the flu or something. Like, I don't know. But either way. All right.
Now, the promotional poster for this is really interesting because it's got a great J.R. Jr. Spider-Man on a web. And it also has a guy standing over Kraven's grave.
Oh, God. I mean, yay!
I really hope that they're not bringing him back. I doubt they are, but, you know.
Yeah, they're probably just doing it to piss us off.
Yeah, probably.
But thank you, intern, for yet another glorious poster.
Well, it's John Romita Jr. art, so that's a poster worth looking at.
Yeah, it's been put together, though, by...
I think it's the best intern yet poster, though. I think he did a good job with this one.
5 cent raise to you, boyo. For sure. Cool. And all what right. numbers will those be again?
That's 568 plus 5. I don't know the exact math.
Screw that. High school's for losers.
Yeah, who needs math?
I guess that's basic math. That's more like screw grade 1.
Yeah, so that'd be like 573.
That looks like August, right?
That'd be like 573. Yeah, it starts in August.
Nice. Yeah, 568
to 573.
That's exciting. All right.
The title has not been that bad.
I agree.
It's been better than a lot of the JMS issues. I just didn't care that for a lot of that really more mystical overtone that ran through a lot of those arcs.
What'd you think of Gale's arc? Because that seems to be universally panned by everybody.
That was the mystical freak. Snowstorm one, or the freak.
Yeah, the freak.
You know, it seemed like they were making a really valiant effort to create another classic Spider-Man villain, but it was mediocre at best. I mean, it was this drug addict who thinks. I mean, the latest issue. Did you read the latest issue, Jen?
No. I read all three at once.
This last issue was
I'm
not going to tell you. It was hilarious though how they defeated the latest incarnation of Freak. He's back yet again.
I'm trying to think here. No,
he's with Kurt Connor, and apparently, like Quicklime, like makes him go back into hibernation. So I guess he's kind of like Starro. From the Justice League in 1962, where he doesn't like the lime going on.
Nice.
And they use the Quicklime to defeat him in what I thought was quite a hilarious way. Tell me when you read that issue.
Will do. Man, I usually wait to the end of the month or whatever, and then I go through and kind of read everything.
Because they're not doing them in 3-issue arcs anymore. This issue was just kind of like a standalone kind of story.
Yeah, I think I got it sitting here, but I just kind of like, I don't know, I just got out of the habit of reading them all as soon as I got them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't hear until only like a little while ago that they're not, that there's like a one shot in there and stuff. So I didn't put two and two together that it was these ones and how soon it came up.
Right.
In short, I've been too busy with school to pay attention. I just kind of buy them and read them whenever. I'm still trying to get through Demon in a Bottle. I've had that for like ever since it came out. I hate when my trades sit there unread. Anyway. What else we got, man?
All right, well, the next news item is that we've got some information on the new Spider-Man video game that's going to be coming out. It's entitled Spider-Man Web of Shadows, and it's going to be completely out of the movie continuity that most of the games have been based on. And it's going to be, I think it is going to be on PS2. I think it's mostly going to be a next-gen console release. And the most important thing is that they're going to be keeping with the huge cityscape and the free roaming capability, which is pretty much standard to have a good Spider-Man game. You gotta have that free roam.
It's kind of like that with a lot of your games now. But they have what's going to be kind of almost an RP style, or not RP style, but it's going to be kind of a choose your own way. I keep going to compare it with video games, but it doesn't really match up with any of the titles that are coming to mind, so I apologize for the pausing. But you kind of get to choose whether you're going to be, you know, good or bad version of Spidey, where you can help people or you can let them be, and they're kind of heading towards a lot of stuff like that. We've gotten a few names tossed around, too, of who's going to be in it.
Yeah, there seems to be, the public's opinion of you is can affect the gameplay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think the names that we've gotten so far, Nick Fury is going to be, obviously, Luke Cage, and somebody else who I currently forget.
Gotcha.
Rockin'.
Nice.
It looks beautiful.
It'd be nice to have some of those new Avenger kind of characters he hangs around with in there.
I agree.
Like Wolverine.
I wasn't thinking Wolverine particularly, but Spider-Woman, Iron Fist.
I don't think anyone wants to hang with Spider-Woman right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. You don't want to spoil that, do you?
I didn't spoil anything. I don't know what you're talking about. I just wouldn't want to hang with Spider-Woman.
Okay.
I'm not down with her.
It's that pheromone thing.
Yeah, I don't
know. All the men love her and all the women hate her.
Yeah. I'd rather go with the one that's on the Canadian team. Iraqi or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the Julia Carpenter.
Julia Carpenter, yeah.
Yep. She's called Arachne now or something.
Yeah.
All our beloved Omega Flight, which is like 90% Americans.
Yeah, I still don't get that.
Yet they diss Canada, or they diss America all through it. That's the hilarious thing. Oh, God. Anyway.
All right, well, this is a news item for you, Jen.
Cool.
And that is that Marvel Animation is working on a Marvel Superhero Squad animated series.
Oh, God, it's going to rule.
I thought you'd like that.
I'm excited. It's a really stylized format. I just hope they don't go too anime with it. Because they might try to play off the Teen Titans crap. I'm kind of worried about that.
I think they're kind of going an anime route, seeing the picture that's available of the Iron Man animated series that has Iron Man as a teenager.
What?
God.
What, is he Iron Lad now?
No, he's Iron Man. He's a teenager. And if the 90s were any education, they should have figured that that doesn't really work out well.
God.
Yeah. But that, I think the new X-Men cartoon that they're working
on,
that's
going to be
good.
Awesome. I am so friggin' excited for that. That looks amazing. I'm sorry. I don't care. It's even going to kick Evolution's ass.
It looks a lot like the art from Evolution.
But they didn't, they took Evolution too slow, though, in my opinion. I don't know. Evolution had some problems. But it was good. It was still good.
Not as good as the first X-Men series,
God,
I don't think.
God, no. But nonetheless, it's going to be, I seriously can't wait to see that. There's also that beloved Avengers one coming out with all the kids.
Oh,
the,
God.
The Cradle Robin one. I don't
know
what to call it. Avengers Babies or whatever.
It's Avengers Next, I think. Next Avengers? Something like that?
Horrible, crappy version. Trying to fill the shoes of Teen Titans. That's what I like to call it.
Yeah. Although I think they're doing a Planet Hulk animated movie, which would be pretty cool, I think.
I think that makes sense, because I really don't want to read it. But I'd watch a feature. That's a lot. I don't have the patience to read all that space stuff, so.
Yeah, we know you don't like space stuff.
I'm not a fan. Shi'ar, go to hell.
Oh, and speaking of space stuff, Guardians of the Galaxy number one kicked ass.
I'm looking forward to that.
It was good. Yeah, I really.
When did it just come out this week?
I think it was last week. Yeah, it had to have been last week because I got it in my shipment.
When I say this week, I mean the last ones that shipped, which would have been last Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. Way to go, Chris. What the hell? Fail.
You get them quicker than me. You live there in New York.
Maryland,
whatever. East Coast roster. You get them on Friday. Tuesday.
Ouch, man.
Sucks.
That's kind of a waste of time.
But your box is also heavier than mine, so.
I don't think it's the weight of the box. Actually, it makes it to California on Saturday, and then DHL just leaves it sitting around on a pallet until Tuesday because they are only required to deliver it by Tuesday with the shipping speed that is done, so it doesn't come until Tuesday.
Cool. I'm a procrastinator, too.
Yeah, they've told me that. I think, you know, when you have overnight stuff that goes out, that anything overnight that got sent on Friday or Saturday has to go out on Monday. So, you know, they don't do anything on Monday that they don't have to. So I just get bumped till Tuesday.
Right.
I bet you for Bob's box, they had, like, hire an extra kid just to, like, do his box all day.
Yeah.
Pay him, like, you know, just above minimum wage. So he
yeah, Bob doesn't... and John Mayo's.
John doesn't get any heavy stuff. See, that's the thing. He just gets
doesn't get the busts. Yeah.
I'm getting all these statues and
yeah,
kinds of hardcovers and stuff. That's the
way. I'm intercepting the mail to steal them right at his house. No. I wish.
Well, you probably have twice of what I get in 2 weeks worth of in 1 week, what I get in 2 weeks, since I do twice a month. So.
I don't even want to talk about how much I've had to cut my crap back. I miss it so much already. It hurts my soul.
Aww.
Wah. But I want to be able to buy groceries. You know what I mean? That's kind of a priority. Kind of. Anyway, go on with the news.
You like to eat all of a sudden. Okay,
Yeah, all of a sudden. Well, not currently, but yeah, eventually.
You could always like dress up and try to get into a soup kitchen or something.
Oh my god! Actually,
or dress down. It's the case.
Yeah, dress down.
Dude, yeah. Anyway, on with the news.
All right.
What else we got?
All right. Well, we have some news concerning both Spider-Man 4 and Spider-Man 5. This being the movies. It appears that James Vanderbilt, who I believe it says wrote Zodiac, submitted a working draft of Spider-Man 4, and this working draft basically lays it out that if they were to do that, based on his working draft, Spider-Man 4 and 5 would be like a two-part story arc that could be shot simultaneously, similar to the way the second and third Pirates of the Caribbean movies were shot.
So, wouldn't that technically, like, be Batman Robin of Spider-Man? The fourth film, where they don't have, like, same dudes or anything? I'm a little scared.
Well, they changed the Batman with the third film.
That's true.
And then they changed him again with the fourth film.
Yeah. Right. And they gave him nipples.
That's where it all went down.
You're not saying you don't know yet whether they're not going to put nipples on the Spider-Man costume in Spider-Man.
This is true. But I don't know. Is that all we got for rumors on that? Like, just
yeah,
not
we don't,
even...
we don't know.
No villains, nothing?
I was expecting villains, or the crew.
God, Kirsten, don't come back. Just stay at home.
You gonna start a hypno-hustler rumor about the villain?
Oh, God.
I'm still pegging for the Lizard. I want the Lizard in this one.
Better be in this.
I think they're due. They got Kurt Connors running around in pretty much every movie. They gotta do something like that.
You gotta mention in the first one he's running around, the second and third. I mean, come on, throw him a bone here.
Throw him a freaking bone. Watch, it'll be a Carnage movie.
Oh, God, no. Please, no.
good times. For sure.
They'll do Vulture. Get some old dude, you know. Get some really old actor, you know, that they figure the Academy's going to throw the guy a bone, you know, one of his last performances. Slap some green feathers on him.
All the names I keep going to say just died.
Yeah. They got to get moving. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Kirk Douglas or something? Is he still
alive?
You know
who they could get for Vulture? The Cedar Point guy. The dancing guy.
Oh, yeah.
Or Six Flags.
That's bad.
Six Flags.
Yeah.
That's it. Whatever.
Oh,
that'd be awesome. That's perfect.
Oh, man.
I would like to see Chris's favorite bad guy. Not him, the Hustler. Mysterio would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, they could, with updates, man, that'd rule.
Oh, with special effects, that would be
amazing. They could do cool stuff as long as they don't, like, Power Ranger-ize the costume.
Oh my god. It'd be like the White Tiger Zord costume.
Yeah, we were thinking about it, and we figured that the normal audience would not accept a fishbowl. So we gave them a Power Ranger helmet.
Nice.
God.
They make a square fish tank and put that on.
Square fish. Oh my god.
Have some fish swimming around in it.
Jen, I want you to use your artistic talents and make an image of that. I need a picture of that. with a square fish tank.
Done and done.
Awesome.
Will do.
Awesome.
My god. That'll be your art for the episode.
It's in every episode. We're now going to have original art being produced.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. Anywho.
All right.
So that's our...
No.
Okay. No, I mean... Yeah, go.
Okay. I've got some Ditko news out there for any fellow Ditko maniacs out there.
Just you. I'm kidding.
The fanzine that was originally started by Bill Hall, Ditko Mania, which ran from...
Oh my god! Sorry. That's
what?
Awesome! I love it! Fanzines what? Rule, man.
It originally ran from 1983 to, I think, 1999, and it was recently brought back. And the first issue, it's going off of continuing from the original numberings, and Ditko Mania number 64, the first issue for this new thing, came out in March. And the issue number 65, it's published quarterly, and the summer issue is scheduled for release in June. And if you go to www.ditkofever.com, you can find out all the information where you can subscribe to the fanzine, and I've got my subscription in, so... I'm looking forward to receiving that in the mail. And then also, Ditko has actually put out some new material. It's entitled The Avenging Mind, and it's made up mostly of essays that he's written, but there's also some new art by him in there. And on the back cover, there's two new drawings that are actually a preview of a new book of original stories and characters that he's going to be doing that's going to be coming out sometime in 2008. Which I'm stoked for. So.
Cool.
And I've already sent off...
I know you're
sent
getting...
Off for, yeah. I've sent off for The Avenging Mind as well, so I'll definitely review these on the show when I get them.
Yeah, I kind of grew into my appreciation for Ditko. I can appreciate, especially reading these early Spider-Man issues, which we're going to get to in a little bit. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate Ditko, but he's still not my favorite artist. He's not someone that I'll, like, seek out his work, you know, like
right.
You do. I think you love him a lot more.
Yeah.
You really dig on the guy, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm really starting to search out some of his work, like we were talking about earlier, that Dark Dominion. Okay, well, this is pretty... I think this might be the ultimate 90s gimmick. Jim Shooter and Steve Ditko came up with this comic series called Dark Dominion, and Ditko only worked on the Zero issue, And for the Zero issue, it was actually broken up into 150 trading cards that you bought packs to collect and make the entire comic book out of. And I searched on eBay, and I mean, they have like boxes of cards on there for cheap, and people are selling their original sets. And I'm actually going to be picking up soon. They came out with a promotional binder, and somebody has that with all 150 cards in it, so I'm going to be picking that up soon. And I'm also working on finding some of his later stuff he did, such as Shade the Changing Man over at DC. And I actually just bought the Marvel Visionary Steve Ditko, which is pretty much is a chronicle of his entire career over at Marvel, from his original monster stories he did for Atlas going up to Speedball.
I'm pretty much with Bob on this. It's kind of like, I appreciate and I'm thankful for what he gave, you know, us in Spider-Man and stuff, but it's not a favorite. Like, it's a little too Archie and Jughead for me.
Like, what? What?
It's not my thing. It's 260. Like, it's just not
We'll talk about it when we're reviewing these issues in depth, but I can see that, especially you look at the very first page of Amazing Fantasy 15.
It's funny, that's like what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that look on Flash Thompson's face. It's like,
exactly.
Oh man,
that's funny.
It's very thinly rendered. Very thinly rendered.
There's a few faces that that drive me nuts through a lot of his work, and it's just me personally, but like...
I challenge you to compare Steve Ditko to Archie reading one of his Doctor Strange comics.
Well, no. Okay. I completely feel differently about him doing Doctor Strange. Now, on Doctor Strange... And he, on some of the weird psychedelic dimensions and stuff that Strange would go off into, Ditko does that stuff. He does a phenomenal job on that stuff. I like him on the Doctor Strange stuff a lot more than I like him on the Spider-Man stuff. And again, I can appreciate the Spider-Man stuff. I mean, the guy designed, you know, the look of Spider-Man and all this kind of stuff. You got to give him props for that, right? But I think... his backgrounds are extremely thin in the Spider-Man stories as a rule, very lightly rendered. Whereas on Doctor Strange, he's seen, he might have been maybe just into it a little bit more. He did a lot more, put a lot more effort into it, I think.
Well, like, even in the book that, you know, the Stan the Can book that we had, Stan talked about how crazy his Doctor Strange world was when Spidey was in that. And I agree with her. That was crazy awesome. And it's just, I don't know, like this, though, like, as an ongoing thing in these books, it's, I definitely, especially reading it for the show, I enjoyed it a bit more than I have in the past, but at the same time, I still have, like, some issues with faces and, like, I don't know, just some awkward aspects that kind of drive me nuts, but it's just not my favorite. I don't know, like...
Alright, well, let's... I don't have any more news, so let's just jump into the main discussion for tonight's episode, which is going to kick off this monthly chronological look of Amazing Spider-Man that we're going to be doing, and tonight we're going to be covering Amazing Fantasy number 15 and Amazing Spider-Man number 1 through 5. So, you know, first up, we got Amazing Fantasy number 15... Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, the origin of Spider-Man. There's not really much that you can say about that. It's pretty much what it is.
Now, this particular issue, or this story, I mean, it's 12 pages or so. Almost everybody who's into comics has to have seen this somewhere. This is reprinted so many times. This particular story that it's got to be familiar, and certainly anybody who's listening to this show, you know, God, I would hope that they would have seen this somewhere along the line.
If not, just leave. Just go. Yeah. No, leave the free peanuts. Just leave. Okay. Now that all the people who suck are gone, continue.
Oh, jeez.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Audience, Jen.
I'm teasing. But leave the salt vinegar peanuts. Those are my favorite.
Yeah. So, anyway. But let's talk about this one. I mean, so on the first page, I mean, you get, you know, when you're talking about Ditko again, I think his strength is in his design sense and in his layouts and his composition. But when it gets right down to, you know, the artistic details, it, especially on some of the face work, some of the poses, they're a little stiff, you know?
Yeah.
Like on this page, you got Flash and that kid who's behind him to the left. That's just yeah. like, it's kind of weird.
I drew that when I was like grade 4, that kind of a face. No, like, just like an yeah. eyes, little eyebrows, and a smile. It just, ah!
But, you know, you flip to the next page and you look at, like, the very center panel on that page. Look at the profile of Peter there. I mean, that's just very, very stiff.
Yeah, totally. And that
but, you know, at the same time, the composition is, you know, I like the composition he's got, you know, with Uncle Ben and then with Peter's getting the wheat cakes and Uncle Ben's, you know, feeling its muscle and stuff. I mean, hey, you know, it's iconic. It's, I appreciate that. It's just I'm torn, you know, in some of this stuff.
The professor's face on the left to that center panel drives me insane.
It's like Hitler.
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
This is a pre-hatemonger appearance yeah. for Fantastic Four number 21.
Yeah.
But I could see what you mean, and I definitely think that he gets better with the faces as he goes along. Like in some of the later issues of the first Masterwork, I think his facial work really does improve.
Oh yeah, I can see that. You know, and as he does more and more, it, you know, it just this story is very, you know, the flow of it, the way that he does it, you can't go wrong with this. You know, and given the Marvel style which Stan was using even back here, you know, you got Ditko coming up with a lot of this stuff. You know, he's, I'm sure, coming up with Spider-Man coming down the wall at the burglar from above out on page 10 and, you know, leaping over him and all these kinds of things. These are great ways to show what he's trying to convey in the story. So I can appreciate that. But just from the standpoint of enjoying the art for the art's sake, I grew up with Romita Sr. So, you know, that was always my gold standard for Spider-Man art. Because
yes,
that was, you know, the first issues that I read. And that just looks so polished and just, to me, so beautiful. You know, this, when you got kind of the dynamic aspect, but then you have just some of the rendering issues that go on. It stands up, I think, pretty good for the day. Because, you know, back in the early 60s, you know, 63, when this was coming out, things certainly looked cruder in general in comics than they do five years later.
Well, in any comic. Not even comics, though. Like, even on from everything from line work on packaging to absolutely anything. It was generally, coming out of the 50s, it was just a rough time in general for, because, you know, just the way it was.
I think, yeah, the standards of what was acceptable was
look
less.
Look at the cartoons, dude.
Yeah. that 60s series was great. That first season of the 60s series was
fun. Oh, I don't even mean specifically this. I mean, like, what passed for a good cartoon show back then? Like, have you seen the animation on the Beatles cartoon even?
Oh, yeah.
A few years later? Oh, my God. Just, oh my God! But yeah.
Well, they were probably stoned when they were doing that, so.
Oh, they had nothing to do with that, man. All they did was plunk their music in there. They didn't do the voices or anything.
No, yeah. The animators were probably stoned.
Well, it was the mid-60s, so.
Yeah.
But for sure. Does anyone want to give this a quick summary by any chance, or should we just all know?
I'll summarize the later ones, but I think this one pretty much is self-explanatory.
He gets bit. There.
The burglar, Uncle Ben, shot.
Oh, yeah, I mean, but that's classic, too. And this is, you know, a lot of people, when you have the art versus writing argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
I give Stan Lee a lot of credit. Personally, I'm a big Stan Lee fan, and think as much as people are artist-centric and, you know, they diss Stan, I look at what Stan did with Ditko, what Stan did with Jack Kirby, with any of the other artists, and there was a certain magic to it that just wasn't there. And I'm not saying it's all Stan, but you know, the collaboration of Stan plus a gifted artist was so much more than that artist alone, in my opinion. And I look at this and just the elements, the key elements of Spider-Man's character that you set down here, where he has a very self-centered attitude, you know, coming into those early pages. And he gets so much story into just 12 pages. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's like, hey, I'm just into it for getting the money. And, you know, I'm going to make this thing so I can get into show business and make some cash. And that burglar goes running by and it's saying, hey, pal, you know, I'm not getting pushed around by anyone. You know, this job, I'm just looking out for myself. And he wants the money and that's it. And then Uncle Ben gets killed. It was that guy he let go by. You know, sorry, people who've only seen the movies. It was not Sandman that killed him. It was this random burglar that he let go. And that's what makes the character, because he's got this underlying sense of guilt. Because if he would have just stuck out his foot and tripped the guy or gone, you know, shot a web on him or any kind of minimal effort, Uncle Ben would not have been killed. And that is the core of the Spider-Man character is set down in this initial story. It's what drives him.
And you know why it's such a short story? It's because there's absolutely no bridging or travel. He's at school, then he's at the experiment, and then he's in the street, and then he's at a wrestling ring randomly. That's why.
Yeah.
There's no bridging.
You know, pacing, you know, there's some issues with, you know, but you know, you can't argue with the fact that they got some stuff accomplished.
Oh, you for know, sure. Like, you know, I you was know, really
boom,
surprised.
Boom, boom, you know.
I was so surprised. Okay, like I'll be like, when I first read this, I was mid-90s-ish, you know, not definitely, my head was nowhere near, you know, where it would have been with youngsters reading this. And it's still, like, of course it stands up to this day. But as for and just as an FYI, as for everything else that we're reading post Amazing Fantasy 15, I'm actually reading I can't really say first time, because I tried to get through all these in the fall, but for pretty much this whole segment for the coming months, it's going to be me reading a lot of these for the first time, because I didn't really get past number 9, because I wasn't in the mindset, but I'm totally back in comics mode, and I'm really digging this, so, yeah. But I was amazed at how much, as you say, how much got accomplished in this issue. Like, I still felt it. And this is generations away, or a generation away. An entire, like, 40 years. And I'm still, you know, feeling it. It's so cool.
Absolutely, and it's just this story, I mean, stands up to me as one of the better origins and reasons. I mean, it's up there with Batman, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. On just really classic on giving the hero a motivation for why they are how they are.
And he questions it, though, later on, which is huge. Like, he still questions, you know, I'm like, this is such advanced thinking in comics. Like, I never pictured a comic from the 60s, you know, him considering, you know, should I be a villain if they all think I'm a villain? That's really deep for a hero in days of, you know, Superman and stuff, yeah. You know?
And that was Stan Lee. My opinion is what Stan
Amazingly,
Lee
brought
to these comics, because this is what set Marvel apart from DC. You know, in the 60s.
Yeah, for sure.
This is what put them on the path to the tremendous success and where Marvel's number one in the industry right now. This stuff is foundational.
Mm-hmm.
It was so different, and it wasn't talking down to the readership. You know, I think a lot of times, and while they're silly fun, and I still enjoy reading the old DC books, I mean, I think a lot of those editors at DC, you know, kind of wrote those books like, you know, someone whose night's going to be reading them, you know, like an 8 or 10-year-old
yep.
who's not going to be seeing too much. And they just wrote stories that had certain plot holes in them, and they didn't really care. Here, I felt that Stan really kind of felt that he was putting together a story a little different kind of a level, which,
long-term.
As you thought, yeah, at the 60s, a lot of college kids were picking up these Marvel comics because they were different than other comics, and it really showed.
Yeah, with the DC, it was basically, this is what who the character is, and then each month you put them in a new story. But with Marvel Comics, they had a real emphasis, Stan Lee had a real emphasis on giving them characterization and advancing them. Especially
and motivational,
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like with Superman, it was basically, you know, Superman is who Superman is, and each issue he would just, you know, fight some new alien or new threat to Metropolis or something, and he never really changed until it got more in the 70s and 80s when DC started to pick up and started to change their characters and go more into who their characters were.
Yeah. Now, Spider-Man, he's got some pretty heavy problems going on. We can, you know, flip over to issue 1 of Amazing Spider-Man. And, you know, on the second page of the story, you know, first page after the splash, you've got some guy coming around asking Aunt May for the rent, you know, and it's like, wow, without Uncle Ben, we've no money to pay the bills. We're going to get kicked out of our house. You didn't see that, you know, anywhere.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, over at DC, Batman was like a millionaire, so he didn't have to worry about, you know, paying the rent or anything.
Most heroes had pretty cool everyday identities. They were a mild-mannered reporter, you know. I mean, that was still relatively cool, you know, test pilot, museum curator,
forensics.
You know, university professor, yeah, police scientist, you know, they had some pretty heavy-duty, cool secret identities going on, you know, or this one, he's a high school kid, and he's, you know, having problems and everything.
He wears awesome vests.
Oh, man. Some of the clothes, it's like I can't imagine living in those days the way, and people must have dressed like this. I mean, you're like going to school wearing a sport coat and tie and a vest and all this kind of business. It's like,
I love the sweater with the big letter on it. That's what I want. I want one of those.
The O.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. That's exactly what I was looking at. Thompson has one too, so. Or I guess I'll just be like Ron and Harry get their sweaters from Miss Lee.
I will have to say, though, you know, getting to this story, the first story in issue 1.
So
this is
are we fully ready to go over to issue 1? Has everybody
we done with 15?
Yeah, but just make sure everyone knows that he got bit. And that's pretty
much. Yeah, he got bit and he became Spider-Man.
I just wanted to note that somebody actually donated to the Library of Congress the original artwork for Amazing Fantasy number 15, Spider-Man story.
Nice.
Which is cool. Wow. I saw that thread on the forum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's better than it being in some stupid millionaire's closet or something. Not that collecting's a bad thing, but I mean, that's pretty
it's
important.
Not quite as cool as if it was in my room here, but.
Yeah, indeed. Or, you know, the Hypno Hustler stuff wouldn't be as cool as having that in your room, right, Chris?
Yes, that original cover art. Oh.
That's
Hypno
right.
Hustler.
Hustler.
Okay, so how about that issue 1?
Yeah, so
there's no rent money, what?
Yeah, so with issue 1 is split into, and the same as for issue number 2, issue 1 and 2 are both split up into two separate stories, the first of which is a story involving John Jameson, the son of J. Jonah Jameson, obviously, who is an astronaut going on a shuttle mission that malfunctions, and Spider-Man has to save John before he crashes, and of course Jonah spins it into Spider-Man trying to gain, you know, the glory and, you know, cheat John, and totally spins it to cast Spider-Man in a bad light. And then in the second story, we're introduced to the first supervillain to go up against Spider-Man, the Chameleon. And this also involves Spider-Man trying to solve his money problems by seeking membership in the Fantastic Four, only to find out they're a non-profit organization.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
So, this first story, this John Jameson story, out of all the stories we read for this episode, this was the weakest story. This is almost the weakest story I've ever
Yes.
You got this space capsule flying around at an altitude that a jet can fly at, and Spider-Man's hanging on the outside of a jet and shooting a web and catching it. And you know, come on. I mean, Stan, you were drinking heavily when you wrote this one or something. I'm glad that, you know, he must have something. I don't know if he just had a lapse or something for this one story, because certainly all the other stories I've read, you know, this was certainly the weakest story that Stan turned out in probably the entire run of Spider-Man.
We got J. Jonah Jameson out of it. So.
Yeah,
I just love the fact that he hijacked a plane, an army vehicle. Like, what the hell are you thinking?
But he had to save John.
Well, you know, somewhere,
they put a big net off of a parachute and try to float it down in front of the space capsule to catch it. What the hell was that?
You know, somewhere some kid's like, I don't know if Venom showed up this early from the 90s animated series.
Oh, yeah. Nope, no symbiotes here. Not for another 20 years or so.
T-minus. Yeah, for sure. I really didn't like Ditko's Jameson in a few of these shots. I can't think of anything. I'll flip through if I can find something specific.
I think he did a nice job with the close-up on that one panel, though.
Okay, there's on Spider-Man Part 2, when the shuttle's launching, there's that bottom one that kind of drives me nuts a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just little things like that. But that was, I'm always saying that, even though we already discussed it, because it's in my notes.
Yeah.
That's how I roll.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at you go to the next page, page 8 of the story, that army guy with the phone. There is like an almost complete lack of detail on that guy's face. I mean, he's got a couple of splotches for eyes and a mustache.
That's kind of a habit, too, which gets a little frustrating. But, I don't know, I guess it's how he rolls. Looking again at that panel, too, with the net to catch the capsule. Wow. What? How would that work ever?
The best it would do is it seems like it would just kind of knock it straight down.
Oh my god!
I think Stan was probably busy with Fantastic Four or something.
And this is the thing with the Marvel method, you know, it's like, I don't know how much detail, how much of this was Stan specifying, hey, whip a net down in front of the space capsule, and how much that was Ditko dreaming that up.
It looks like it's only a few meters across, too. Yeah.
It's just, oh, man.
Hey, John, make sure you steer the spiraling capsule into this little 3 meter by 4 meter net. Did you notice too that the web noise back then was twing?
Twing.
Like, well, that's not quite a thwip, but
yeah.
I guess it works for now.
Yeah, working on it.
Twing, getting there.
Yeah. I like early in the story where he tries to cash a check in Spider-Man's name.
That was good. The stuff with Fantastic Four is pretty hilarious too. I like that whole kind of fight that they had going. Invisible Girl. She wasn't even a woman yet. Poor lady.
It took her a long time to become
promoted to
Invisible Woman. Yeah, it was
'80s. It was the 200s.
Yeah, 20 some years. She became the Invisible Woman. She was already a mother long before she became Invisible Woman.
I was about to make about that, too. I was like, oh, man, her ovaries are going to be shriveled up by then. But apparently, no, they weren't.
Yeah, she had Franklin long before she became Invisible Woman, I think.
Franklin was like
annual number six.
Yeah.
I think.
Right. With Annihilus.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that guy.
He's one. I always thought he's Annihilus is a cool villain. I've always
like,
dug him.
He's caused a lot of havoc lately too. So.
Yeah, but Jen didn't read that. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was kind of mocking it because I actually haven't touched Annihilation yet.
One day.
I think
I'm adding that to my list. Watchmen. I think I was talking with somebody else on something you need to read, and then Annihilation.
Thanks.
So, second story, Jen, page 3. Spider on the back of him on the top panel up there. That's got to drive you nuts.
What the hell is that, a mop head?
It's pretty funny. And then the first panel on the next page, on page 4, it's just... These are the... Chris, I mean, and again, all respect to Ditko. It's the kind of stuff like this that drives me freaking nuts when I look at the Ditko Spider-Man. It's okay. Just like, oh my God. You know, it's like basic freaking draftsmanship. I mean, how fast is he cranking these pages out?
Spider's just a... It looks like it's a ink splatter more than a spider.
I can't even draw, and I can draw a better spider than that. I mean, it's like embarrassing.
That's awesome.
But can you draw the webs?
No, I can't. No, I'm just saying that's why it's weird because you know it's like you'll have on one hand, you know, you'll have really nice things, but then something like that is just sloppy because you know he can do better.
Like, every time he does a headshot of Spidey, I think it's awesome. Because I love the way you used to draw the eyes.
But yeah, then,
like on page 7.
Page 4. Even page 4, the middle panel on the right.
That's what I was looking at. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Awesome.
Exactly. I'm like, that's, you know, but Spider's a little wonky. At least it looks like a spider. But,
I mean, that's what makes matters worse. You know, it's like you see something like that, and you know he can do it. And then when he doesn't, it's just like, what's up with that?
Well, look when the chameleon's pulling off the skin mask with the Spider-Man outfit on, I think it's the next page, no, 2 pages after that, roughly. Mm-hmm. The spider on his chest there is just like a blob, almost. Like, with, I don't know, I'm getting nitpicky, but...
Well, that's the chameleon's costumes. So
okay, fair enough. Well, it's a knockoff. It's a Japanese knockoff.
I get a no prize.
Nice.
You know what I was thinking when I was reading these issues, too? It's funny because John was kind of bagging on Brand New Day because he was running out of web fluid several times in the first couple issues. Well, he ran out of web fluid a couple of times in these first 3 issues also. And the first time happens here on page 9 of the second story in issue 1. He runs out of the web fluid. Like,
so at least it used to happen, though. You know, it's not like just... I don't know, it's kind of cool that it goes back all the way to this first issue that started... Because that's a pretty hugely defining thing for Spider-Man, is to have his web randomly run out at the most inopportune times.
Yep. So, I mean, and then when he's out, and it doesn't... You know, actually, if you... count the pages, you know, it's not that far because he runs out of it here on page 9, which is the second to the last page from issue 1. And then in issue 2, by page 6 of issue 2, he's out of web fluid again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, dude, you're running out of web fluid. But that's then
it.
He, yeah, exactly, he creates that
awesome
belt with the cartridges so that he can carry extra web fluid. And that's a beautiful defining moment that's just ingenious.
So far, the only thing I'm seeing in these books that has changed slightly is, well, other than his twing, but is how people use a spider sense to contact him as if he's a freaking walking mobile phone.
Oh, what was it? Yeah.
But that's about the only... What I'm saying is, they were... really even changed him a whole lot for 40 years of continuity. Like, you know, character-wise or what he's about, you know? And that's pretty excellent. You know, he was still running out of web fluid and, you know, still just, using the gadgets and doing safety checks. I don't know.
Speaking about the web fluid, like, going back to Amazing Fantasy number 15 where they explain, like, one panel, he just has the web fluid, like, they don't even go into how he made it.
Hey, I'm a smart high school science student, man. I can whip up stuff like that, no problem.
My favorite part about that is how he fabricated metal web shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a 15-year-old high schooler. As much as I love that aspect of the character, I gotta say it's a little questionable the way
even looking at when he tears the costume fighting the vulture, right? And he's, you know, oh man, I gotta like sew this, you know, together, and I'm no seamstress. Was it the vulture he was fighting when he did that?
I think it was Sandman.
It was Sandman.
Yeah, when his mask got ripped and he's sewing.
Yeah. But even, so he creates the costume in Amazing Fantasy 15 in an afternoon or whatever, in a panel again, just like the web shooters. But, you know, and then he rips the mask, you know, a few issues later, and he's like, oh yeah, hey, you know, I'm no seamstress, but I'm... You look at that, but you look at, like, anybody who makes their own costume to go to a comic convention, and by and large, these things look like crap. You know what I mean? So, you know, as much as he says
these guys are usually 40-year-old, you know.
I'm not talking about the body type. I'm talking about the workmanship of the actual costume, you know. And I'm just saying that, you know, the costume, he does a pretty good job on making this costume by all intents and purposes.
Especially we didn't get mommy to make it, like the con.
Where do you get the fabric and stuff to make something like this? It's like even if you're trying to make a costume, especially the shoes and, you know, these plastic lenses that he uses.
Especially magical chemical ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, where do you find all these ingredients? I think the costuming people want to know.
Indeed. Well, he just went to the same place that the Project Runway people go to. Mood Fabrics or whatever. I bet that's where it was.
There you go.
I love Project Runway. Make it work. That's what he did. Okay.
Well, that would be made it work, but he made it work, but...
No, well, Tim Gunn always says, make it work, people! And then they have to make it work, even though they have, like, 5 minutes left to make an entire pair of pants. Anywho. Well,
back to the story. Now, this is Steve Ditko handling the Fantastic Four, and they're a whole lot different than Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four.
Really? I have not read Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four, so I would not know.
They're recognizably similar.
Yeah, well, like with Jack Kirby goes for the more blocky look for the Thing, and the Thing, the way Steve Ditko draws him is more like using stones.
Well,
round stone.
He does the Thing in FF number one. I think, you know, the Thing ultimately
evolved,
but in early issues of FF, he did look like this.
Yeah.
With the kind of really loose way that he's drawn here, so.
With his mouth wide open and sleepy eyes.
Yeah.
It's just the weirdest facial expression I've ever seen on the Thing, I'm sorry.
What?
It's more like it's the panel where he's like, I knew it. That kook has rocks in his head. It's like, wait a second.
Yeah, that struck me too when I was reading it.
Nah, I can't.
Hey, you guys are reading this out of the Master Book, right?
Yes.
Now, does yours randomly have the chameleon's mask just turn green out of nowhere?
No.
Because, like, it's on page 6 of the story in that top panel. in it's, my copy, for some reason, his mask is green instead of white.
It's white.
No, it's white.
You got the fail copy of the Masterwork.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like these comic world and, like, well, it's just like these Mission Impossible movies. The ones with Tom Cruise, where you have these people running around with these plastic masks on, and you can't tell that they're not, you know, like Tom Cruise or whoever the hell. Or have you ever actually seen someone with a big rubber latex mask on over their head? You know, it's usually not like, man, that's totally indistinguishable. That guy's wearing a mask.
I know.
That looks exactly like J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
Okay, what else do we want to cover in issue number one here?
With the Masterworks, I like the little bonuses they throw in, like the personal message from Spider-Man that they have at the end of it.
Yeah.
What's with all the awkward silence?
Well, maybe we've covered it in depth enough. Then we're ready to move on, possibly?
Ready to move on to issue number two.
All right.
Vulture.
Yep. And the Tinkerer.
And the terrible Tinkerer. He's not just any Tinkerer.
Because it's not a Stanley comic unless there's alliteration involved.
That's right. Now,
or adjectives.
They didn't get one on the Vulture. It's not like the voracious Vulture or anything.
Vindictive.
Yeah, that's a better one.
The Virgin Vulture.
He could be. He's pretty decrepit, but
exactly.
He wasn't always. He was a young Adrian Toomes at one point.
That's why. That's why he turned to crime. He turned to crime. That's why.
Yeah, that's true. He's just backed up. You know what was funny about this one? So there's two things that stood out to me about this. One on the art side, and one on the writing side. On the art side, like these tail feathers on the Vulture's costume are so lame. I'm so glad they got rid of those, like, by the time he appeared again. Apparently, though, if you look at the very last panel of the story, I think they, like, when he got put in jail, they said, man, these are lame, and just ripped him off his costume because they're not there in the last panel on page 14. I also like how in the Marvel Universe, they let these dudes sit around in jail in their full costumes, you know?
I know. I noticed that, too. They do that in the annual, too, I think.
Yeah. You're asking for it, you know, in my opinion. But the other thing is, it appears to me that somewhere between issue one and issue two, Stan Lee just totally forgot that Jonah was doing the Daily Bugle, and all of a sudden he's doing Now Magazine without any explanation. And everyone's talking about, like, oh, yeah, he always has done Now. But then he backtracks on it in a later issue where it's like he's the publisher of Daily Bugle and Now Magazine, where he was already kind of like retconning. He goes, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot that. But it wasn't a mistake because he does both.
Well, if you see the panel of the Now Magazine building, it says J. Jonah Jameson Publishing. So
yeah, that confused the hell out of me.
So see, there's two different sides to the building. On one side of the building, it's the Daily Bugle, and then on the other side, it's Now Magazine.
Yeah.
See? So that's how it works.
It just flips.
Yep.
They just have a rotating sign.
Yeah, one door leads to the Bugle, then you go around the block, and the other leads to Now Magazine.
Totally. Cool. All right, do you want to summarize?
I think we got some nice faces on the Vulture.
You're so destined to, like, prove that the faces aren't as bad as we're making out.
Well, I give him credit. On page 5 here, there's some actual rendering on the Vulture's face.
Page 2, right. Look at the people on the middle on the left. Oh, my God.
That's a step up from the first, though. You gotta give him that. It's a step up.
The woman, dude! Her eyes are like a mile apart.
But they're not like blotches. They're not blotches, though.
Look at
the guy, the guy in the bottom left panel. He's talking to Jonah. He looks like he has like a leader head. He's got this like really high, tall head on.
Oh, yeah.
This is totally going to become a shot game.
Yeah, I don't want to keep on ripping on Ditko, but
I know.
No,
but as someone who's not particularly loyal to Ditko or anything, like I notice it every time and it drives me insane. I'm sorry.
You know, to Ditko's credit, you know, inspired design. Other than the tail feathers, which he got rid of before the vulture
good
came
man,
back,
good man.
The next one, you know, I like the vulture costume. It's a pretty cool costume.
You don't like the red and black, the new show?
I like the classic design here. You know, I like the design of Sandman. I like the design of Doc Ock. You know, so he did some good work. You know, Electro,
Mysterio,
he created some Mysterio, Kraven. You know,
all the bad guys you just mentioned, up to Kraven, not inclusive, all have green as a really main color in their costume.
Yeah, that seemed to be a thing at Marvel, you know, where bad guys had greens and purples.
Leader, Abomination, Kang.
Yeah. And you didn't have a lot of green or purple on good guys.
Right. And
the good guys had a lot of blue and a lot of red, maybe some yellow, but green and purple were mostly bad guy colors.
That's a really genius way to insert some semiotics there and kind of keep it straight in your mind. That's really genius on their part.
And those are also, you know, kind of secondary colors too, right? You know, like you got the primary colors, the red and blue.
Yep.
But, you know, the greens and purples, those are mixtures. They're secondary.
Where's the love for orange? What the hell?
Yeah, there's a lot of orange.
The Cupid's using hot pink for every sky.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm done.
I thought this Vulture one was pretty cool. I liked it. You know, the flying in a subway, not so much, but, you know.
I thought that was smart on his part.
I just, you know, like room-wise.
I totally didn't expect that.
Physically improbable, you know.
I totally didn't expect that, that whole sewer thing. That was crazy. I was like, that's so genius. I would never expect, like, kind of an old school comic to really do that. Like, as a young person reading it, it's kind of like, you expect them all to just be like, oh, look, I grabbed your wrist and now I have you. It's not like that at all. I know I sound like a complete wench, but one of my favorite parts in this issue was Spidey crouching down and using his jump to get out of the water tower. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Mm-hmm. We got a nice, good close-up on the Spider-Man face there, too.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
And again, you know, this issue where he creates the you know, web fluid cartridges and the belt, you know, kind of like the utility belt kind of thing with the extra web cartridges. That's genius, you know.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, something just hit me. Okay, so he's been wanting, in Amazing Fantasy 15, he's been wanting, like, this microscope forever, and Aunt May and Uncle Ben finally buy it for him, and in issue number 2, he's got, like, a lab and all these chemicals, like, bubbling and stuff. So he couldn't have been wanting that microscope, like, a lot. He seems pretty loaded on the science.
Yeah, but he got all that money from doing the TV appearances. You know, he got some cash at one point in one of those before they laid that check on him that he couldn't cash.
Well, he did come away
with some money.
Yeah.
All he's doing is just messing with some floor cleaners and stuff in there, you know, making some possibly meth and making money on that on the side.
Oh man!
Clearly, I mean, use your head, man. Common sense.
Yeah, he was buying a lot of Sudafed.
You got it. I hate that stuff.
I love at the end where Peter's like, there's that thought balloon while Peter's counting the money, and he's like, totally like, he just thinks I'm a typical high schooler. Good. You know, like, he's totally got this. He's totally like, God, he's totally one step ahead of Jonah, and he's just like basking in it.
can see him rubbing his hands
like
together.
He's like supervillain rubbing his hands together, like you said, yeah.
And I like how he ran.
A lot of bills he paid me is what I like also.
I really like, too, how he just randomly makes a little gizmo that shuts down Vulture's costume and stuff.
His electromagnetic field is like, hey.
What the hell is that?
He's so smart.
I have a magnet so I can fly.
He's a science kid, you know?
Well, no, like, what? How, is there really science behind, like, electromagnetic what-y-what's?
I don't think there's a whole lot of between any of the stuff Stan dreamed up.
there's some.
It was like
stuff.
Pseudoscience, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's didn't DC like, was the same way, you know.
Didn't he get like transistors wrong too, like with Iron Man?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure you know. It's like practical ability to do any of this kind of stuff is kind of.
You know, there's a few times in these books where the science was just like, wow, good thing these didn't come out these days, because you know how there's always like a physics of some fantasy world book that comes out from some professor somewhere? They have like the science of Harry Potter and how the broom would fly if it were real and everything. Good thing they didn't have that kind of crap for this back then, because, man, they get reamed. Oh, well. Alright, so basically we have a tailless Vulture in the end.
Yeah. Maybe the cops took him on. Maybe they were like, dude, you look totally lame with these tail feathers, you know?
It wasn't the prison guards who tore him off. It was...
It was Bubba in the next room.
Bubba in the next...
Bubba. The not too much talked about supervillain Bubba.
Oh my god, next issue, please.
Yeah, the Dorian issue, too. The terrible tinkerer who will fix a transistor radio for one thin dime.
Yeah.
This is the story of everything we read that I really couldn't stand.
Even more so than the space capsule one?
Yeah, because honestly, I'd rather see John than like these random alien things, so.
Yeah.
You guys are on your own for this one. Have fun.
This one, well, this whole story, I mean, it seemed like to come out of one of these old monsters. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Atlas. Yeah.
These monsters look like exactly something that would, the alien plot of the guy is. It's essentially one of these stories from an Atlas monster comic that they just dropped Spider-Man into. You know, what if Spider-Man wandered through one of these wonky alien invasion stories in an Atlas comic?
He had
comic?
To fix a clock.
Or radio.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I think this is the first time where we see the half Peter Parker face, half Spider-Man face.
Well, that's
on
a good point.
Page 4, panel 4.
Oh, it's on page 3, panel 3 also.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Way to go. No. God, these things are so ugly.
What?
The aliens.
No, I meant the Tinkerer. I mean, look at those eyebrows. Well,
he's an old man. Well, at least he has the mask of an old man.
You know, reading this story, you have to wonder how they were able to retcon it. Like, they had to completely throw, like, everything that was about the story out the window. Because just reading it, it totally reads like science fiction, not people dressed up in costumes. Like, the aliens are talking about, you know, monitoring generals and stuff. I mean,
yeah, unless they said they were filming something. Like, how did they retcon it? Where did they do it?
It was in Spectacular, like 50-51.
And that far away?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think Mysterio was actually one of the aliens. I think they retconned him as one of the aliens, I think.
That's intense. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
So a story that nobody would have wanted to read got retconned. Okay.
You could say it that way, Jen.
Well, I mean, it was in Spider-Man 2, so.
Yeah.
People will read. This is you know, so page 8, you know, they give the little diagram of how the web shooter works. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
To have in there.
Well, I have to wonder if the air, if, okay, how is, like, maybe I don't understand physics, but even though the holes in the thing are tiny, would that give him air, not force the air out? Or do I not understand physics at all?
It looks like
not,
when he
it's not you that doesn't understand physics. It's Stanley.
Okay, because I was like, okay, so they're trying to, you know, kill him, and so instead of completely taking all the air out of the thing, there's like these little holes in it, and that allows him to escape. Like I couldn't figure out like how that worked.
Well, unless the aliens don't need to breathe, and they created a vacuum in the room outside the little capsule.
That's
then
true.
Then the air would get sucked out through the little holes.
That's true. But I don't think that's in any of the word balloons, so.
For help
or
and stand.
Expository.
The big idea, man. The big idea, man. You don't bother with the details.
Yeah, exactly.
It stands the man, so, you know.
We'll just let it go. But I did like seeing him shoot. How accurate he was with his web now and being able to shoot through the little hole.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. And you know what? I will say this about Ditko. I really like his flames and the shape of the flames he does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making them all pointy and jagged. I know that sounds really like a silly thing to say, but once again, I'll take this moment to totally bag on Buscema again, or Buscema.
Sal?
And, yeah, Sal. Yeah. You always make me say Sal. Yes,
well, because John Buscema is a really nice. He does some really nice work.
Oh, his Silver Surfer stuff. Oh,
yeah, Conan. I mean,
all right,
I
Tangent
love
Boys.
Man.
All right, Tangent okay. Boys. But no, seriously, like his Sal. Sal's flames are just like jagged pieces of crap. So I mean, it's awesome. I really like Dicko's flames. They look really sweet. I totally get a tattoo around my arm with some barbed wire with that. Okay.
I'm telling you, dude, it's the inker that hurts Sal. His stuff in the 70s is pretty solid.
I actually, I will say now, though, especially on the now that we're recording, I went back and I read, like, a lot of issues of the later Spectacular, Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some really great stuff by Sal in those books. I was really impressed. I read like the last, like, or I skimmed, I should say, the last 30 to 40 issues of the whole run, and it was really good. Like, there was some nice Puma stuff and Vermin stuff, and basically it looked like the height of his horribleness was during Clone Saga.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll let it go.
That was when Sienkiewicz was inking him.
I don't know who it was, but whoever did the time bomb arc, that should be taken out of the street and, you know, just jab butt with their own pen.
Yeah, I think that was Sienkiewicz.
That was horrible, man. I'm sorry. I'm not one to completely, you know, crap talk people on here, but oh my god, dude. Okay, I'm done. So yeah, flames are pretty.
Okay. So if there are no people at all and it was just a book by Ditko with flames, you would buy it.
Well, you know, if he did the Human Torch, you know.
Oh, I'd be so for that. That'd be amazing. Sweet.
He seemed to change his design for the Human Torch from going from issue 1 to 3.
I didn't notice.
Well, I always found an amazing Human Torch. He'd just like be standing around in the Baxter Building, looks like fully aflame, you know?
Yeah.
Like, dude.
Yeah.
We gotta make everything out of asbestos in this place.
Then they'll die of cancer.
Yeah. Like, Reed has to make some non-asbestos fireproof fabrics or something.
Nice. Oh, man.
But Reed's really smart, too, so he can do
it. Oh, that. Yeah, so.
The air is... got, you know, asbestos particles in it so things don't catch fire. Then they
so
all
we
realize
ready for...
what,
yeah. Oh, go
what
ahead.
Idea that is. No, I'm just babbling. Whatever.
I was just saying, are we ready for my favorite of these issues?
I just want to make one more note. I believe that Steve Ditko, I think I read this in the Five Fabulous Decades of Marvel, that with the logo in the top left corner of the cover. I believe that Steve was actually the person who came up with that.
Cool.
Kind of that headshot on the cover. I think that was Steve.
That's such an awesome feature, too. It always gives you a chance to... I used to geek out about looking at those when I was a little kid, and collecting all the different titles and stuff, and seeing how different they were.
Mm-hmm. That was a nice feature.
It's funny how little
Steve Ditko.
Yeah, it's funny how like little details like that totally stand out and make and actually change the experience. You know, you'd think something silly like that wouldn't be a big deal, but I used to totally geek out about those little pictures in the top corner of the cover when I was a little kid. So, good on you, sir. Good on you.
And now they're back.
Yay! Cool. Alright, so we're moving on to issue 3.
Yep. Doc off. Enough said.
Strangest foe of all time. Dr. Octopus.
Most dreaded supervillain.
I love Doc Ock. He's my favorite Spider-Man bad guy.
He's a little overused for me. I'm not saying he's bad or anything, but I don't know. Maybe I just suffered from movie over-promotion and stuff when Spider-Man 2 came out, but blah.
He was used a lot in the comic, too.
Oh, I know.
He
was in... I don't know, like, I got tired of the whole gimmick.
Oh, my cane.
I will say, though, he did pretty well with the ladies. I mean, he did got Aunt May and Stunner, so.
Yeah, well, he got the VR Stunner, but, yeah, the real Stunner, Not sure if that would be a win.
Nice. Epic loss. All right, so I guess a little summary of this one?
Basically, this is the introduction of Dr. Octopus. He starts off as a, you know, regular scientist working at an atomic research center, except he has, you know, robotic arms coming out of his body. And there's a accident, and the arms are grafted onto his body, and his mind is also really just totally goes out the window, and he's totally nuts, and... He's been taken to a hospital, and he traps the doctor and the nurses while he's performing his experiments. And hearing of the situations, Peter, of course, as Spider-Man, races off to save the day. And for the first time since getting his powers, he's actually defeated in battle.
Gets his ass kicked.
Oh, yeah. Like, Doc Ock just totally bitch slaps him when he's got him held by his arms.
He comes close to quitting. He comes close to quitting, and that's, you know, you mentioned this before, Jen. I mean, this is something that is kind of a heavy thing, you know, and he comes back from it, and it is kind of another defining moment for the character, this issue, I think.
It takes a pep talk from the Human Torch to spur him to fight Doc Ock once more, and
2 + 2 = 3.
Now, Doc Ock is what I would consider to be the first super villain. Because, Tinkerer, he's some alien posing to some 150-year-old dude who fixes radios, or a Tinkerer, rather. You know, the Chameleon just puts on masks. You know, the Vultures, you know, some guy who's, you know, another 90-year-old guy who flies around. You know, Doc Ock's the first guy who's got some power, which it's no doubt that he's the first guy that actually puts the smackdown on Spider-Man, because he's the first one who's not, you know, he's probably the first bad guy he fights who's under 60 years of age, you know.
That's true.
Hey, you remember how you guys were talking about the square fishbowl? You got your square radiation cover.
Yeah.
Doc Ock here.
We get another invention in this issue, the spider signal,
which he
uses to strike fear into the hearts of criminals.
Very nice.
Look, it's. Don't be shy. You could say my name.
I'll pass.
Spider-Man. Spider-Man. It's Rick James. So.
That'd be funny to see. Like,
that's what Doc Ock is saying as he's slapping him.
Yeah, I love that panel. Page, that panel's page. Awesome. It's page.
It's everywhere, nine. Too. Like, whenever someone talks about Ditko, that's usually the panel they pick for Spider-Man.
Page 9.
I think yeah. I even have I think I have a pinup of that, too, actually.
The bitch slap panel?
Yep.
I like the one to the left of that a little better. A little more dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, come on. It's
but
like...
the bitch slap. It's all about the bitch slap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Doc Ock is the juggernaut bitch. He is.
Because he's
he
fat.
Gives him that slap.
Is he Australian? or was the guy that played Juggernaut British? I think he's Australian. I don't know.
Well, Wolverine's Australian, so.
Yeah, clearly. Australian-Canadian. Oh, man. Speaking of Canada, I can hear fireworks still going off very loudly. It's 2-4 weekend. Or no, that's in July. It's 2-4 weekend, which is... It's based around the Queen's birthday, but everyone... It got renamed 2-4 weekend, which is for...
Because you bought a lot of beer?
That's exactly it. It was named after the 2-4.
Okay.
2-4 cases a day.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not alcoholic.
Okay. We'll believe
no,
you.
Kidding. I'm just a college...
You have what? You have a Molson in your hand right now, don't you?
Hell no. I have a Keith's in my hand. No. Okay. No, I'm a Alexander Keith's chick. No. But the Molson commercials are wonderful, especially the ones this year. They're hilarious and so very true. They're always the pinnacle of Canadian-ness around hockey season. Anywho.
Well, this is one of the first stories I remember reading. I don't know where I read it in reprint form, but like the page 5, that whole scene where Doc Ock is taking the bars off of the hospital, I can picture that scene in my mind from the reprint.
Yep, and this is also the first full-length Spider-Man story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the first issues 1 and 2, it was 2 stories, and we don't see another 2-story issue until issue 8 with the Tribute to Teenagers issue with the Living Brain.
Yep.
Intriguing.
Or as I call it, the elusive issue 8.
Which Gallo got.
Which Gallo got, the rat bastard.
I really like the little test tube and wire thing he made. What, they really do a great job at showing how freaking smart and practical he is. That's crazy. Like, he makes this kind of, I don't even know what to call it, like a rope, like a net of chemicals and wire. Like, it's just so cool. Like, it's like he's in a gang. Just make your own weapons.
Yeah.
He'll be shanking the next villain. Oh, well. With the tail feathers from the vulture.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. I got nothing.
I like the panel. I like the panel where Doc Ock uses his the arms to go into under the ceiling. He's just like hanging there.
Where's that?
It's a page 10, the last panel, where he's like up against the ceiling and he's got the arms.
Yeah, it's like notice an extra pipe or two. You know, he's got the arms sticking straight down as that guard walks by. That incredibly well-defined silhouette of a guard.
Burn. Nice.
But, you know, facially, Peter Parker on page 13, he looks relatively decent. And
yeah,
there's a good Ock face on page 12.
This is going to be an ongoing thing now.
Yes, it will. Yes,
he does look kind of maniacal there. I also like the way that he defines how the pincers are, you know, whatever the mandibles at the end of the arms,
The
you know, which you get a good, you know, Yeah, I mean, those are cool, the way he designed. Again, I give Ditko a lot of credit, you know, for design work. You know, the Ock thing with the arms and everything, brilliant. I love it.
I really like that panel you're talking about with how crazy Ock looked. The shading is just awesome in that panel. I really love that. That's a really defining moment for the character as well, so.
I also like on the page 20 where Ock's hanging from the web and he's all kind of webbed up and his arms are hanging out with a little Spider-Man note on it.
It's another neck.
Yeah, another, you know, compliment to your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. We don't know what the note actually said, but we can imagine.
It's got, obviously, I think he just drew a picture of himself, and because that's clearly what it is.
Well, which, you know, begs to, you know, he carries some pens and paper around in that costume.
He has one of the compartments in his belt holds business cards.
I have to go to Business Depot.
He's got like a Sharpie and note cards.
You know, I've realized we haven't talked about the underarm webbing.
Well, let's do that now. The underarm webbing. It's almost like he can glide like a flying squirrel.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. Like, look at the panel next to where Ox webbed up. That's pretty hardcore.
It is pretty big.
It's like, wow, yeah, he could totally... It honestly looks like he could glide on that, so... I don't know, everyone else loves it. Yeah, of course
you dig it.
Little fanboy.
I kind of prefer... You know, I don't mind it that much, but I mean, you know, I didn't miss the absence of the webbing. Kind of comes and goes in later issues.
I'm not, I don't know, like, I can deal with it. I'm not going to freak out about it, but I don't like it this big. This big, it actually kind of drives me nuts. But
yeah, I like the more subdued, when it's a little smaller. I mean, when it's kind of going from... Boy, all the way down at his butt, you know, up to his wrist.
Yeah, it's butt to wrist, yeah.
It's pretty severe. It's big.
It's getting a little 2099-ish before it's time.
Yeah.
A full-on cape. Heck yes.
Oh, and on the last page, nice going of Human Torch flaming on in the doctor's office.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, man.
Thanks, Doc. You didn't need that easy chair anyway. Or those drapes.
Or those eyebrows.
Or the office.
The drapes would just go right up, man. But, like, notice the detail in the scene where Spider-Man's talking to Human Torch. Notice how they're showing that Torch is casting a light. Because you know how it's kind of they have a spherical thing going on around them as, you know, describing their conversation. And they actually... have the background or even the, you know, just the elements of the panel lit up more on Torch's side, you know, showing that he's throwing light, which I thought was really cool. Like, that's it's
that shows up in the previous panel too.
That's really cool. I dig that.
But then on the flip side of that, there's absolutely no detail of the room whatsoever in that panel.
Well, I think they're going for more of a, like, artistic
thing
there. So, I mean, who cares about Will you feel so sad if there's no drapes in the picture?
Well, mm-hmm. I don't care if there's no drapes because they'd be aflame, but, you know.
Roast some marshmallows, man. I like how he thanks him, too. And even though he's already thanked him as Peter Parker, he thanks him as Spider-Man. And if Torch doesn't put that together, he's a moron. But then again, he can't add it, so.
Yeah. Whatever. Well... Yeah, it's Torch. Oh, and, you know, that made me think of, something... Oh, yeah. Okay, so going back to... Because I just remembered, going back to issue 1, you notice that, like, all the Fantastic Four, like, know Spider-Man's a teenager. And then you go to, issue number 12, where Doc Ock unmasks him, and he's, like, surprised it's a teenager. Like...
Ooh. Well, yeah, like, Ock is probably not expecting to be fighting some 15-year-old kid.
Well, yeah, but Yeah, like the Fantastic Four, like, yeah, he's a teenager, and, like, nobody else recognizes he's a teenager.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's
and
right.
I know Reed is smart, but Ock is smart, too.
That's a good point.
He's a nuclear physicist.
That's a good point. Yeah.
All right, well, as we move on to issue 4, Jen had to bow out, so you're going to be stuck with me and Bob for the rest of this.
We'll make them mercifully swift. I don't know if we'll do that. No promises, but nothing can stop the Sandman in issue number 4.
Nope, and that's a pretty unique cover,
yeah.
How it's made up of panels and not just one singular image.
That's one of the few times they actually did that. Mm-hmm. So that is very cool. It gives you kind of an idea of Sandman's powers for the intro. Very neat. Nothing can stop the Sandman except perhaps a vacuum cleaner.
Yes. Well, basically, to summarize this issue, this is the first appearance of the Sandman. After, in the course of the fight, Spider-Man's mask comes off, and Peter runs away from the fight, and Jonah is, of course, all, you know, giddy that Spider-Man ran away from a fight with a supervillain, and Peter's in school, you know, just minding his own business when the Sandman, at the same time he's in class, comes to the school to hide out. And Peter, of course, you know, sneaks away and changes into Spider-Man. And in the course of the battle, defeats Sandman by sucking him up with a vacuum cleaner.
That pretty much summarizes the episode. Some of the interesting parts about this one that I think the Sandman is an extremely cool kind of villain.
Mm-hmm.
Very original. I do think they really kinda gave you a turbo sized version of his origin. I mean, they hit you with it in about you know, 5 images, you know.
Yeah.
They really didn't screw around a lot with storytelling back in the day. But
he's even got a missile going through him.
Yeah. The funniest part about this episode is pantsless J. Jonah Jameson standing his office with his pants off.
Yeah, Peter puts a web on Jonah's chair. Jonah, basically, the only way he can get out of the chair is by taking off his pants, and Peter has to go into his office and give him a new pair of pants, and there's just a shot of Jonah with his back to the reader, and you can see his underwear and everything.
I'm surprised that Jonah keeps extra pants around the office.
Yeah, that's true.
Miss Brandt, get me some more trousers, you know, from my cupboard full of trousers.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the first appearance of Bray Brandt.
Could be. She might have been in one of the earlier episodes with that, but go on. That while I vamp. Tell us more about the episode while I flip through pages.
Well, this is also where we see characteristic of Ditko's storytelling, and this is as opposed to the 6 panel page grid that Steve Ditko uses, a 9 panel page grid in a lot of his stuff. And they actually went quite in depth with this on the In Search of Steve Ditko documentary. And how it sort of creates a more close, claustrophobic kind of a feel. Because with the taking up, extending the panels from 6 to 9, there's less space for each panel, obviously.
Yeah, it does appear to be the first appearance of Betty Brant.
And I think it's either in this issue or it's in the next issue is when there's a moment between the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in the next one.
This issue is kind of a controversial one to me. in that it's the first one where he sort of fakes the pictures.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically what happens is Peter takes care of the Sandman by vacuuming him up, but he completely forgot to take any pictures, so he takes some sawdust and sets his...
Sand. It's sand.
Oh, sand. Oh, it's sand. Okay. And so he takes sand, and he just tosses it up in the air and makes like he's fighting the Sandman. He's just fighting sand. And, of course, J. Jonah buys the pictures up.
So, I mean, they are faked. You know, they're faked pictures.
Yeah, and he does the same in the Electro issue, too.
Yeah.
But I think he actually came clean about that one.
But good issue.
Mm-hmm.
Strong villain, strong story. I like the origin. I like the character.
I like how Ditko sort of made his face more, you know, like gravelly. Like in that close-up on page 11 of his face.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of ill-defined on purpose, though, where he's, like, transitional.
Right. And since this is by the Marvel Method, and a lot of this was, you know, free reign for Ditko, this we see a lot of use of Sandman's powers, such as when he's, you know, like... That sort of Sandman snake sort of deal when he's avoiding the cops and also using the extending his hand and making his fists into blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And this also has the funny scene of when Peter rips off his mask and he's, you know, panicking on if, you know, Sandman reveals his identity, even though he probably has no idea who Peter is at all, but that's that image of Aunt May selling shoelaces.
Yeah, it's funny.
And this is also the sewing issue we talked about earlier.
Yeah, where he's sewing up his mask.
And pricking his finger while he's doing so.
Ouch. Hate it when that happens.
Yeah.
I like how he goes at the Sandman with the drill. That's kind of inspired. He, like, takes the drill because Sandman's, like, in a hardened form. So he goes at him with the drill to make him go into kind of a fine sand form to avoid the drill. Then he whips out the vacuum cleaner and sucks him into the vacuum cleaner. So he tricks him. So then we move on to issue number 5, unless you have anything else to summarize on 4.
Yeah, this is sort of the start of Liz Allen kind of having feelings for Peter, because in this issue, Liz was actually going to give Peter a date. But of course, Pete, you know, being preoccupied with Spider-Man, he turns her down. She totally gives him the cold shoulder. And also the students kind of notice that Peter has some muscle. He's not a weakling like they had originally thought.
Not too many people remark on that, though. It's just kind of like a passing comment. You know, hey, feel the arms on this guy?
And then Liz is like, too bad he doesn't have the courage to match.
Yeah.
Well, when we get to issue 8, we get to see them go at it, him and Flash, in a boxing match.
Well, we'll have to wait for that until next month.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got the silliest matchup, Spider-Man versus Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom is really out of character in this issue. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't really see Dr. Doom trying to team up with anybody.
Yeah, he's like, maybe Fantastic Four is kicking my butt all the time. If I had Spider-Man to team up with me, that would give me just the edge that I need to beat the Fantastic Four. He must be a bad guy because Jameson's always bagging on him, calling him a bad guy in the paper.
Yeah. And as opposed to the Chameleon, I think I could see Doom having a spider wave, spider radio, as opposed to the chameleon. I think I can believe that more.
Yep. Now, this issue also has some interesting parts to it, because you got Flash dressing up as Spider-Man, and the mistaken identity, because Doom, well, we talked about a little earlier where, you know, Doom's like using some kind of weird spider-based thing to create kind of a spider radio to communicate English words, I guess, to Spider-Man through his spider sense.
Yeah.
But then Flash dresses up as Spider-Man, and he's going to jump out from behind a fence and, you know, surprise Peter Parker. Just when that's happening, Doom has created this additional device, which is going to be zoning in on and detecting spider powers. So he's going to find Spider-Man by using this. So he's flying around in a helicopter, and he comes up and he sees Spider-Man, and what looks like Spider-Man in a costume on one side of a fence, and really it's Peter Parker on the other side of the fence that's setting off his detector, but he gasses Flash in the Spider-Man outfit and takes him captive. And then Spider-Man, of course, has got, you know, he had crisis of conscience. He's got that kind of crazed look on his face there on page 11 of the story, where he's, "What a break for me! The FF will never agree to Doom's terms, so all I have to do is keep out of it, and Flash Thompson will never bother Peter Parker again. Things are finally going my way." He's like, looks just totally crazed on the Peter Parker side of his face. Then he's like, "Ah, oh, what am I thinking? Who am I kidding? I could no more sit back and let harm come to Thompson than I could swim to the moon. The real Spider-Man will have to go into action." So he might have those devilish thoughts, but, you know, he's going to be a hero at the end.
That's a nice artistic touch. And even though I've been trying to give my props to Ditko throughout this episode, on page 12, there is no spider on his chest.
Yeah.
So there's a little artistic mistake there.
Yeah, oh yeah, you missed that. I didn't notice that. Look at the phone building. Big ass old phone on the roof. That's pretty funny. So, I mean, he fights Dr. Doom. I like this web ball that he creates with the kind of liquid web fluid in the middle of it that he uses to jam up Doom's finger blaster. That's kind of neat. This iron sphere device is kind of weird.
I sort of got a Doctor Strange Ditko vibe.
Yeah.
From that, just with them swirling around.
Yeah. But, I mean, he fights Doctor Doom. He, you know, okay, you know, Doctor Doom's usually going toe-to-toe with the Fantastic Four. He has a relatively fair accounting of himself, you know, but he's fighting Doom and a Doombot here. Doom should not have that much trouble with Spider-Man. I mean, Spider-Man, I like Spider-Man. He's not, he's you know, a rookie. You know, he's only a couple adventures in, and he's not in the FF's league here. So Doom should have been able to hand this guy his ass. I mean,
if Ock could.
Yeah, Ock bitch slapped the guy a couple issues ago, and Doom is having trouble with him. It just doesn't seem right, you know. And then Doom, like, you know, just hightails it when the FF come flying up in the Fantastic car. He's like, "Oh man, I gotta get out of here. I don't want to fight the FF again," which again is somewhat uncharacteristic for Doom, but what can we say?
Yeah.
And Spider-Man, oh yeah, the other part of this issue that's funny, because Spider-Man has to come up with excuses on how to get out of the house, because he's home with Aunt May, and she's like, "Oh, we got to stay here, and, you know, we can't go out on the street with these, you know, bad guys running around." And
yeah.
So he goes down to the basement and pulls a fuse out, blacks out the house. "Oh, I got to go to the store and get a new fuse at me." And that's his excuse. So he's gone the whole issue. Then he comes back at the end, and he gets back, and he's like, "Oh, man, I didn't get the fuse."
Yeah.
I forgot. Well, I'll tell her I was too scared to walk the dark streets alone. Well, that doesn't hold. What the hell were you doing for the last several hours if you weren't walking the dark streets alone? And he didn't break the fuse. He just took the fuse out. Just give her back the fuse you took out. She's an old woman. She's not going to notice. But she was over at the neighbor's house anyway, so that was kind of funny.
Something interesting. Okay, so when Spider-Man first meets Dr. Doom, of course, Dr. Doom, you know, being planning and being one step ahead, the first Dr. Doom Spider-Man meets is a Doombot. And the Doombot has a thought balloon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes. You know, that almost, you know. Okay, so we've got him as a Doombot, okay? That's valid, but then having him have a thought balloon. But we do have a. At the end, when Peter's in Jameson's office and he's, you know, yelling at him for not taking, you know, pictures of, you know, Flash Thompson and Doctor Doom and Spider-Man and all this, and Betty Brant's like, "Don't feel too badly, Peter. I may only be JJ's secretary, but I think you're wonderful." So.
Yep.
Seeing the kindlings of the romance.
So there we have it. The.
Yeah.
First earliest adventures of Spider-Man. He's on his way to being a major player in the Marvel Universe. We've got the introduction of quite a few classic villains. He's got some, you know, a couple of crossovers with the FF have shown up a few times, Human Torch. That was another part. We didn't really mention it going along, but that was another really key part of the early Marvel books where you'd have these just casual crossovers happening to kind of entrenches everybody in the same shared universe.
Yeah, like especially in the annual, and pretty much every Marvel hero shows up.
Yep.
All right, well, next month we'll be covering issues 6 through 10, and I'm looking forward to that because issue 6 is one of my all-time favorite issues.
Yeah, out of those 6 through 10... 6 is probably my favorite one out of those. I like 9, too.
Mm-hmm. With Electro.
Yeah. There's some good stuff in there, though. So, people, you know, want it in color. You got Marvel Masterworks Volume 1. The very first Marvel Masterworks that they did was Spider-Man. As yep. Well, it should be. And this is also available in much cheaper form in the Essentials. You get it in black and white there. And a lot of these stories have been reprinted time and time again.
And if you don't want to shell $50 out for the Masterworks, you can search around your Barnes & Noble and see if you can pick the Masterworks up. Because, well, Barnes & Noble did this experiment where they reprinted the Masterworks in paperback instead of hardcover, and they're only $12.95. That's how I got all mine. So you might want to scour your local Barnes & Noble and see if they still have any left. I've seen them at mine on the clearance a couple of times. All right, well, I think that's a wrap.
Very good.
Do you want to pimp the comic book page?
Sure. For more current comic book reviews, you can join myself and John Mayo weekly at www.comicbookpage, all one word, www.comicbookpage.com. Each week in about 30 minutes, we try to review one Marvel, one DC, and one independent book. We stay clear of any major spoilers on the stories. We don't go as in-depth and panel-by-panel as we did on these Spider-Man stories. That's pretty spoiler-free. We also do the Mayo Report once a month where we analyze Diamond Top 300 comics. And we have a previews episode once a month where we go over recommendations that listeners send in and that John and I talk about also from the current month's previews catalog. So if you get a chance, come and join us at comicbookpage.com.
All right. And if you want to email the I'm all tongue-tied tonight. If you want to email the Amazing Spidercast, you can do so by shooting an email off to amzspidercast@gmail.com. You can also call our audio comment line at 206-350-8184. And if you would like to, you can stop by thecomicforums.com and check out our forum, where you can participate in the Supervillain Showdown that Bob Retall posts for us.
That's right. And this week, when are you going to get this episode up?
It'll probably go up on next Saturday.
Ah, so we'll be into the next one by then, hopefully.
Right. And if you want to download current episodes of The Amazing Spidercast, you can go to theamazingspidercast.libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com. And if you want to check out the older episodes, then you can swing on over to theamazingspidercast.podomatic.com for those. And I think that's a wrap of the information. So, Bob, thanks for joining Jen and I for this episode.
And thank you for having me. It was fun.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, everybody out there, for listening, as always. And we'll see you guys next week.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.